An uncomfortable silence descended. Ryan hadn't yet agreed to serve as actual emissary for Don Tenorio, although he had consented to see if he could talk the cacique into reopening communications with his rival the alcalde. The companion's very survival dictated maintaining neutrality for the moment, especially here in the very shadow of Don Hector's palace, in the presence of a couple dozen of his bodyguards. Although he personally saw the force in Hector's arguments, Ryan was unwilling to say anything at this point that might seem to commit Don Tenorio to any course of action.
What do you call those obsidian-edged clubs? I noticed some of the Chichimecs were carrying them, too.
Ah, yes. The Macahuitl.
The companions looked at one another. It was what Felicidad had called for yesterday when her tiny hand blaster proved useless against the tentacled unknown that had held her.
Amha Macahuitl Tuzek Ha.
Hector called out something in a guttural language Ryan knew wasn't Spanish. One of the three sergeants of cadremen turned and came trotting up the slope. Sure enough, it was their old friend Two Arrow. At Don Hector's command, the big eagle knight pulled the weapon slung at his belt and handed it over. At close range, Ryan realized the odd yoke and arm and shin guards that made up the eagle knight armor were molded out of plastic. The Baron examined the weapon a moment, then proffered it to Ryan by laying it across his own left forearm, hilt first. Ryan picked up the weapon gingerly. It was about the weight and dimension of a conventional metal machete, maybe 2 feet long and 2 to 3 pounds in weight. The thin flakes of obsidian had been cunningly fitted so as to form an almost continuous edge down both sides of the flat hardwood club. The weapon was square-tipped, and while handy, was blade-heavy, as only made sense for a dedicated hacking and slashing weapon. Ryan handed it off to JB, and Mildred came close to study it over his shoulder. Firearms were her first love when it came to weaponry, but no graduate of med school who had studied and practiced surgery could remain neutral about cutting implements.
Nice heft. Do some damage with this, no mistake.
JB took a couple of passes in the air with the weapon. He handed the weapon to Mildred.
But stone for a cutting edge?
It's a form of glass. Glass will take a sharper edge than any metal alloy. I've known some docs, mostly Latinos who knew their history, who insisted on the surgeons using obsidian blades when they had to go under the knife themselves. Cuts were finer, cleaner, healed quicker.
She turned the Macahuitl in her hand and grinned.
Not that I suppose that's a big issue for this baby, huh?
As you perceive, the vulnerable point of such weapons is not their ability to hold an edge, but a regrettable tendency to break. Still, my elite warriors and the Chichimecs are devoted to them, and not solely because of their traditional resonance with our people.
Mildred handed the weapon back to JB, who passed it hilt foremost to Hector. The cacique pivoted and said something in the guttural tongue of Two Arrow, who had been standing staring at the outsiders with a hint of unpleasant smirk and more than a hint of savage gleam in his eyes. The warrior knelt and accepted the weapon back, then stood quiveringly straight.
Your behavior inconvenienced our guests. However, you have served me bravely and faithfully. I have decided to accept your flowery sacrifice. Cut your throat.
Two Arrow's brown hands snapped up. The obsidian blade bit into his neck. The warrior's head lolled to the side. A geyser of blood erupted from his neck as he folded to the ground.
Holy shit!
The brunt of the blood flood sprayed Don Hector, who received it unblinking. Then he turned to his visitors. His eyes seemed to stare out of a horror mask of gore.
Return to Don Tenorio, and do me the favor of telling him I will meet with him 2 days hence at a place of his choosing. Tell him also the truth you have witnessed with your own eyes, that I, and I alone, possess the will and the means to save our valley from the Chichimecs.
He's crazy. That son of a bitch is flat-out, floored, schizophrenic.
Jump back fast back there. Blood scared?
Jack, I'm a physician. You know that. But back in the 20th century, that was something we took seriously. And besides, it took me all by surprise, damn it. I never imagined he'd do something that barking ass crazy.
Which made it all the more effective a demonstration of the loyalty he commands from his household troops, Dusky Princess.
Which only goes to show they're as screwy as he is. And while you're at it, you can seal that Dusky Princess crap in lead and dump it in the Marianas Trench, you goofy old coot.
Millie, our man Don Tenorio doesn't seem to really want to be a baron. In this bad old world, what I've seen of it anyway, Only those who want it really bad can hold on to it. He seemed a nice enough old guy for somebody who pays too much attention to white coats. But if I was a betting man, and of course I am, my jack would have to be on this dude Don Hector, even if he is crazy as a shaken-up jar full of hornets.
Shh. Baron's always crazy. Way a big deal.
I don't believe you people. He's tried to have us killed not once, but twice.
Neither time on purpose.
So he says. But even just for the sake of laughs, stipulating that he didn't mean it. Correct me if I'm wrong, John, but are you not just as dead if you get chilled accidentally as on purpose? Either way, dirt hits you in the eyes.
People, this isn't really our fight.
Ryan was sitting in the back seat with Christy beside him, gazing morosely out the window, letting the warm, moist air, smelling of clean water and fertile soil, and only ever so slightly of the omnipresent sulfur, tousle his shaggy black curls. He had been a little uneasy approaching the checkpoint at the landward end of the causeway. Tenorio had allowed them to go to Hector without trying to send along any kind of chaperones or spies. But it would be right within the parameters of baronial paranoia for him to decide that, having broken bread and spoken with the enemy, they were never to be trusted back into the city. Or perhaps not except under armed guards, as prisoners, virtual or outright. But no, the sentries had grinned and waved the way the scabbies always did to the visitors, hooked back the razor-tape tangles and moved the blocks, and gestured them right on through. Did that lack of apparent suspicion in itself indicate weakness on the part of Tenorio or his people? Mildred sat back and crossed her arms.
It is if we have intention of staying here, Ryan, making some kind of lives for ourselves other than running from danger to danger, living off the linings of our stomachs until we can scrounge a few self-heats or MREs. But if y'all like that kind of life, we can always shine it on. Maybe find our way back through all that lava to the redoubt, jump somewhere else, and hope we finally lit in paradise.
Now, Millie.
Don't you now Millie me, John Barrymore. Don't even.
I fear our esteemed physician. Is that cognomen acceptable to you, mademoiselle? Our esteemed physician has a point. I do not believe any bonds unbreakable yet bind us to this place, nor to the parties involved. But if not here, where? And should we choose to light here, at least for the time being, we may find ourselves perforce choosing sides.
One thing's for sure. We won't be joining up with the Chichimecs.
There's a point to what you say, like always. That being, if we stay, we fight. Or we're food. Since I'm not up for getting eaten, that makes our problem figuring out the best way to help fight.
Tenorio's a friend, if a baron can be anybody's friend. He's a good man. I believe that. I do. I also believe he's a weak leader. Hector's crazy, and he's probably a sadist. Like J.B. says, what else is new? That seems to be another part of being a baron. You got to be ready to force people and to hurt people to get them to do things your way. So why is it surprising most of them seem to like it so much? It's the job. One thing taken with another, he seems to have the force, both in personality and manpower, to swing the weight. Can we honestly say that about Tenorio?
Tenorio and his people would be hard to beat in the city, Ryan. Maybe we should think about that. The Scavvies have achieved self-sufficiency, or near to it, in food and water. And we know enough about guerrilla fighting, not to mention city fighting, to realize how hard it would be to dislodge them, for either the Chichimecs or Hector.
Ryan nodded slowly, not quite seeing where she was heading.
They can't keep people out, though, Christy. We know that pretty damn well, too.
No, they can't. But getting raiders inside the city and getting the scavengers out are two different matters. Tenorio's people know the place. It's their home. We have to figure they'll fight for it and fight hard and well. I have to think that means they could hold out pretty near indefinitely if they had to.
So what you're saying is we could throw in with Tenorio and his mob and just let the landward part of the valley go hang? Maybe. But I'm not so sure how well that idea sits with me, to tell truth.
Nor I, J.B. It's just something I think we need to take into consideration.
Now, it don't gripe at me because my heart started to bleed cherry syrup for all those poor suffering people out in the valley I don't even know. But dark night, fording up in the city, waiting for the Chichimecs to wear us down, living every day just waiting to die. Well, losing slow is still losing.
But have you not just described life itself, John Barrymore?
Maybe. But I guess I like the illusion that I got a chance.
What do you think, Jack?
City's no good. Moving on better.
Doc?
They were approaching the city and the Flat Island parking lot, where they would of necessity have to leave their big wag. Doc began to slow the Hummer.
It seems we find ourselves faced with a choice between Scylla and Charybdis, or as may be, between the Devil and the Deep Blue Sea. I believe I am just as glad to abide by your wisdom in this matter, Ryan, for I can see no easy resolution to our dilemma.
People, I don't like to be the voice of doom here, but I think there's something else we need to look at.
Speak up, Mildred. Your thoughts won't do us any good if you don't let them out.
Can we live under Hector? Any more than the Chichimecs? What if he decides to tell us to cut our throats? Or just asks his fat boy Mendoza or this fire-haired daughter of his you folks got crosswise up back in the city to do it for him? Maybe you have to be a bastard to be a real baron. Maybe you have to be a little crazy. But not this big a bastard and not this crazy.
Ryan scratched under the lower edge of his eye patch, where sweat was making it chafe his cheek.
You got your sights lined up right on that.
He sat back in his seat and gazed at the ruined towers of the city, thrusting up right in front of them now.
Trader always used to say, a leader who shows doubt really isn't a leader after all. Maybe that's so. Most times it is, I reckon. But we're bound up together by trust, and we aren't bound by anything at all, so I can't lie to you. The plain fact is, right now, I don't know whether to pull the trigger or to snap on the safety.
Don't worry. You're not perfect, lover. You're human, and you aren't made of vanadium steel. We noticed that. When the time comes, you'll make the right call.
Look on the bright side, my dear Ryan. We do not have to make up our minds right upon this instant. Don Hector's agreed to talk to our esteemed host. After all, who knows what might happen?
Something generally does. And that there's the whole red-blasted problem in a cartridge case.